Yesterday's stormy weather damaged crops and buildings in southwest Montana. Good evening, I'm Sarah Jovetich.
And I'm Courtney Anderson, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
Capitol reporter Dan Boyce takes us to a rehearsal of one of the world's most famous plays. And in our feature interview, reporter Edward O'Brien talks with a young man whose life was changed by a garden. Winds gusting up to 89 miles per hour during a strong thunderstorm severely damaged crops in Gallatin County. Montana Grain Growers Vice President Matt Flickma says he's never seen such extensive damage to the county's wheat and barley crops. He expects very little crops will be harvested, with work scheduled to begin next week. Flickma said the damage from yesterday afternoon's storms could approach $50 million. The storm started in southwestern Montana. Wind gusts up to 104 miles per hour were recorded in Polaris, northwest of Dillon. The National Weather Service reported major damage to homes and some trees. Strong winds and possibly a tornado caused severe damage in twin bridges, uprooting trees and blowing the roof off at least one building. Golf ball-sized hail fell across much of Belgrade and the northern part of Bozeman.
And in other news from around the state, a U.S. Forest Service firefighting crew investigating a wrecked car near a Forest Service road in western Montana found a man who had been trapped in a crashed vehicle for 3 days. The crew gave medical aid to the man this morning until a Frenchtown rural fire crew arrived and removed him from the car. The man was taken to the hospital in Missoula. His conditions were not known. The Montana Highway Patrol is also investigating the crash. No other information was immediately available.
And another fatality in Columbia Falls, a 51-year-old man has died in a one-vehicle crash. The Montana Highway Patrol tells KECI-TV the man was eastbound on Highway 40 at about 2:40 a.m. today when his car drifted to the right side of the road, jumped the curb, and struck a light pole. The vehicle continued across the junction with U.S. Highway 2 and hit a second pole. The man died at the scene. His name has not been released.
A 60-year-old Washington State woman was killed when her car drifted off Interstate 90 in western Montana and crashed into a tree. The Montana Highway Patrol says the crash happened at 5:30 p.m. yesterday near Saltese, about 11 miles from the Idaho border. Trooper Rich Hader says an initial investigation indicates the woman's car drifted off the road, hit a guardrail, and then crossed both eastbound lanes before crashing into a tree in the median. The woman died at the scene. Her name was being withheld while family members are notified.
And near San Ignatius, a 22-year-old Arlie woman has died in a two-vehicle crash. The Montana Highway Patrol says the woman's car went off a county road shortly before 8 p.m. yesterday. She overcorrected and lost control, and the car slid sideways into the path of a pickup truck. The 66-year-old San Ignatius man driving the pickup was taken to a Missoula hospital for treatment of unknown injuries. The woman's name hasn't been released.
Montana students have fallen short of this year's benchmark set by the federal No Child Left Behind Act. The testing goals require that 94.8% of students score proficient or above in reading and 90% in math. Office of Public Instruction spokeswoman Allison Hagen said today that 84% of Montana students tested as proficient in reading and 66% in math. Superintendent Denise Juno says No Child Left Behind is a broken system and must be replaced with one that provides meaningful information to educators, parents, students, and communities. The agency says Montana's graduation rate increased from 82.2% to 83.9% during the 2011 to 2012 school year. The national graduation rate is 78.2%. The 2013 No Child Left Behind graduation rate goal is 85%.
Rumors continue to swirl about Democrats who may run for the U.S. Senate seat being vacated by Max Baucus in 2014. Another potential candidate said she wouldn't be running earlier this week. Stephanie Shriok helped run Senator John Tester's 2006 campaign and currently serves as president of the Washington, D.C.-based group Emily's List. She says it is not the right time for her to run. Other Democrats still considering a bid include Superintendent of Public Instruction Denise Juno, former Lieutenant Governor John Bollinger, and current Lieutenant Governor John Walsh. Governor Steve Bullock answered questions about a Walsh candidacy during a press conference today. Bullock says Walsh is an extremely talented leader, but says he is not going so far to encourage him to run.
We've had some discussions about it, and I think it's true that he really hadn't given much thought to it. He likes the job that he's doing, and he's doing a good job at it.
Many thought former Governor Brian Schweitzer would consider a run for Baucus' seat, he was considered the Democrats' best shot of keeping it. But Schweitzer announced last month he did not want to leave Montana for D.C. Two Republicans are currently running, Missoula Representative Champ Edmonds and former Billings Senator Corey Stapleton. Many Republicans are also hoping freshman U.S. Representative Steve Daines will run for Baucus' Senate seat. Political website The Hill reports Daines says he is seriously considering the race.
The state insurance commissioner says a new website will help Montanans navigate the complicated federal health care law. Monica Lindeen said it is in place where people can get Montana-specific information, ask questions, and find answers. The website is montanahealthanswers.com. Lindeen says everyone has to understand Obamacare is the law of the land, whether you, quote, love it or hate it, unquote. She says the site answers questions dealing with consumer protections, federal tax credits, and subsidies some people will use to buy insurance, and explains the controversial mandate to have health insurance. The commissioner said the biggest changes start next year when insurance companies can no longer deny coverage. The federal marketplace, touted as a place to buy insurance, is supposed to be running in 2 months.
The Montana Attorney General's office is depositing a new $40 million check, money from the sale of Blue Cross Blue Shield of Montana, to an out-of-state company. Another $100 million or more may eventually be on the way as Blue Cross sells off its assets. Under state law, that money needs to go toward creating a nonprofit foundation with the broad goal of improving the quality of health care in the state. Attorney General Tim Fox appointed former UM Law School Dean Ed Eck as the initial interim trustee. He's leading a search committee to appoint the final board of trustees, which will oversee the foundation. It hasn't been determined what exactly the foundation will do to improve health care. Eck says that's why it's so important the right board of trustees is selected to decide on the best direction possible.
It's likely that as situations change, the trust will use the funds for various healthcare needs over the lifetime of the trust, which we expect to be perpetual. That's why it's important that we have trustees that are familiar with their communities and familiar with Montana's healthcare needs, or are interested enough to make themselves familiar with that.
Eck says the search committee will be looking for trustee applicants through this next month. The committee is looking for those with leadership positions in healthcare or in their community. Also, those with knowledge of investments and nonprofit work are encouraged to apply. Positions would be paid, but not full-time. Trustees would be able to keep their current job. Eck says these trustees would have the potential for a real positive impact.
We all know that we have underfunded and unfunded health care needs across the state, particularly in the rural areas of the state. And these trustees will have substantial resources with which to address some of those problems.
Those who want to nominate someone as a trustee to the Montana Healthcare Foundation need to submit their nomination letters by August 9th. Potential trustees must apply by August 23rd. You can find a link to apply by visiting this story on our website. That's mtpr.org.
The state commissioner of political practices says a real estate agent broke Montana campaign laws by spending $1,600 in newspaper advertisements seeking to unseat Missoula County School Board trustees. But Commissioner John Modell said today that John Suprock's ads did not amount to illegal vote buying. Suprock ran the ads pledging a $10,000 reward to candidates interested in unseating incumbents in May's election. One of the incumbents, Scott Bixler, filed a complaint with Modell. Modell ruled the amount spent by the ads means should have triggered the disclosure of the name and address of the person who paid for them. Modell referred the violation to the Missoula County Attorney. If the county attorney declines to prosecute, the matter goes back to Modell, where the penalty will likely be a negotiated fine.
Romeo and Juliet, arguably the world's most famous love story with some of the most well-known lines of any play in history. Helena Theater fans will be taking in an outdoor staging of this classic Shakespearean tragedy over the next 2 weekends. Capitol reporter Dan Boyce speaks with the cast about just what it takes to do justice to the play's timeless text.
Not what you want to hear on an outdoor play's Thursday opening night, a rain and hailstorm swirling right over your stage. The Montana Shakespeare Company's production of Romeo and Juliet cancels the day's show.
Wilt thou be gone? It is not yet near day. It was the night.
Instead, cast members sit and run through the play inside an empty storefront nearby.
Look, love, What envious streaks do lace the severing clouds.
Yet, no matter how many times an actor recites these iconic lines,
I was not the lark whose notes do beat the vaulty heavens high above our head. I always.
There are just so many of them.
Retake.
Helena actor Brian Ferriter plays Romeo.
Yeah, I think uncut Romeo has like 660. We've probably cut it down to about 550.
Of course, the way every actor prepares to memorize a part like this is different.
It is the lark that sings so out of tune.
For Julia Porter, who plays Juliet.
One word at a time.
When she really sat down to memorize.
Like a weekend, maybe, just to learn the lines. Some say the lark and lo the toad changed eyes.
But that's just the words on the page. There's so much more to it after that. The way Brian Ferriter, our Romeo, thinks of it, there are really three memorizations.
You memorize it where you can just sit down and say it.
That's phase one. Then comes phase two, where you actually get up and perform it.
Not move.
You are a lover. Borrow Cupid's wings.
That's no small task. There's so much to figure out. Actor Maxon Davis lives in New York now. He's originally from Great Falls.
Be rough with you. Be rough with love. Prick love for pricking, and you beat love down.
He's playing Romeo's witty, fun-loving friend, Mercutio. He says it takes discipline not only to figure out what Shakespeare's words mean, but how they fit into the dynamics between the characters.
When the language gets a little more arcane and the jokes get a little more obscure, as long as I can cleave to the thrust of what's going on in that moment, then the joke will play.
Done will draw thee from the mire of this irreverence love wherein thou stickest up to the ears.
That leads to Brian Ferriter's third phase of memorization, which he calls having it in your bones. At that point, just sitting down and running the lines back and forth may not work as well as it used to.
It takes a very intense concentration for me personally.
By Showtime, director Kim DeLong says it's about bringing these words written hundreds of years ago into the present moment. If in doing so, they don't come out exactly as written, he says that's not the ultimate point.
It's not just the meaning of the words, it's the character of how they're played. That's why Shakespeare needs to be, it is a visceral, experiential event, not a sedentary intellectual event sitting around reading it. You can't understand Shakespeare until you play it.
That is when the weather allows you to play it.
What care I what curious eyes doth quote deformities? Here the beetle brow shall blush for me.
I'm Dan Boyce, reporting in Helena.
The Montana Shakespeare Company's production of Romeo and Juliet plays through this weekend and Thursday through Sunday of next weekend at the Great Northern Town Center in Helena.
17-year-old Jesse Linton of Missoula has changed a lot over the past couple of years. Not too long ago, Linton says he went through a rebellious phase, some partying, intentionally irritating neighbors late at night, got a few tickets along the way too. He moved out of his house and couch surfed for over 2 years before moving back in with his mom. It was a tough time, and he says he was mostly just looking for some attention, even if it was the negative kind of attention. Things weren't going so well at his high school either. So Linton decided to attend Missoula's Willard Alternative High School, which happens to have a school garden. His teacher saw how well he did in that little garden and suggested that he apply to work with the Garden City Harvest Youth Harvest Project. Garden City Harvest is Missoula nonprofit that grows produce with and for people with low incomes and offers education and training in what it calls ecologically conscious agriculture. In tonight's feature interview with Edward O'Brien, Linton explains how that one little high school gardening class proved to be a pivotal turning point in his life.
I have a very select group of people that I'll hang out with and do stuff with, like outside of work and stuff. And I like to be alone a lot, and gardening just gave me that opportunity to kind of be alone, distance myself from other people that I didn't want to be around, I didn't want to talk to. Let me be alone, let me think.
Centers you a little bit.
Yeah.
You were quoted as saying, I like knowing that when I showed up to the farm that I was appreciated and accepted there, and it feels great knowing I did something good, I don't have to fake it. I enjoy being around all the plants. What does that mean? I don't have to fake it.
Like at school, with some teachers, it was like, yeah, you know, I'm really excited to be here. You know, I was faking it. I was letting them know that I was excited. But, you know, I wasn't really excited. I just didn't want to hurt their feelings that I wasn't too excited to be in that class or to be there. But I don't have to pretend to be excited to be up there. I don't have to act happy. I get up there and I feel good and I'm happy, and it's because of the people up there.
Yeah, and you went from Willard, you got connected to Garden City Harvest's Youth Harvest Project. What is that?
Youth Harvest is just where Garden City Harvest will employ about 8 youth. We'll bring them up to the Peace Farm and they'll work harvesting and selling vegetables to subsidize housing facilities.
So you liked it so much, you're now an intern and a mentor there, right?
Well, since I worked there last year, I just really liked it and I got the opportunity to come back. So I'm doing pretty much the same stuff I did last year, but a little more of a leadership role. I'm kind of expected to sit back and I think kind of ease people into it. Like, some people aren't so outgoing and flamboyant about being up there, and you know, it's early in the morning and not so many people feel like getting up and doing work that early, but I don't know, I'll just kind of sit back and throw some jokes, make some people laugh and bring the energy up, and then people are happy and not so grumpy and everybody's awake. And
so you don't sit there and lecture them? And
I don't think I could sit there and be lectured, so I couldn't do it to somebody else. Yeah, no, I'm just pretty much the same thing I did last year, just a little more responsibility.
So what sort of work is done up there then?
Just about every day we'll harvest some vegetables, harvest them, we'll wash them, we'll throw them in the boxes. The Peace Farm will do a CSA, which is Community Supported Agriculture. Community members will buy a share of the farm's production and come up to the farm and buy a variety of vegetables, so we'll harvest for that. And then Youth Harvest will harvest for our mobile market sites, which is going to subsidize housing facilities and selling our produce for nothing over a dollar. Weeding, lots of weeding.
Backbreaking?
Not so much. Now I'm kind of used to it, but definitely starting out, yeah. I mean, I'd go home and throw an ice pack on my back or something, but
what sort of produce?
Everything. Lots of lettuce, carrots, beets, kale, chard. Today they were harvesting Walla Walla onions. It was the first succession of them, I guess. So we just finished scallions. We got cabbage. Tomatoes are looking pretty good.
You just got back from a trip from L.A., right?
Mm-hmm.
What was going on out there?
I was there for Rooted in Community. I wouldn't call it an organization. Well, kind of like a coalition, as a lot of people make it up. It's just getting people back to their communities, I guess, getting them involved with growing food in their communities. I was there for 5 days, and I saw 2 grocery stores the whole time I was there. Everything else was taco stands or burger joints. And that was something that they really, the people there, the supervisors, people we were talking with, that was something that they really stressed, that there wasn't a lot of healthy food around for people. And Rooted in Community was a way to get good, local, healthy food back into communities.
And you were scheduled to give, what, a 45-minute presentation?
Yep.
What? 45 minutes? That's a lot of time. 5 minutes is a lot of time. What'd you talk about?
I went over the fundamentals of Garden City Harvest, our 4 main programs. I talked about the Peace Farm, what I do on a day-to-day basis. I showed some pictures. Some people asked some questions. But I was just mostly talking about what I do and how it's helped me, how it's affected me, and how I've become a part of my community.
Are you glad you went?
Very glad. Well, it was nice being able to get out of the state, seeing a completely new place and all the different people. But I definitely learned a lot of things there that I didn't know.
I'm curious, going from Missoula to Los Angeles, what'd you think of Los Angeles?
It was huge.
Good huge, or like were you a little weirded out by the whole thing?
I think good huge. I've been to Seattle, so I wasn't completely shocked by how big it is. I liked knowing that I could get completely lost in there. Yeah, it was kind of nice, though.
How would you compare Jesse, I don't know, a year or two ago to Jesse today?
I'm a lot more mature and a lot more responsible. Say, just 2 completely different people with their morals and their values.
Morals and values, what do you mean, in this case?
I'd say 2 years ago, my main concern, the main thing I wanted to do was just to go have fun with my buddies. I wasn't concerned about school, concerned about making money, where I was going in life. I didn't care, didn't put any thought into it. Now, you know, I can't wait to start up school again and to get it over with. I think I want to go to college. Yesterday I went to Butte for this Beef to School Coalition thing, and went to a meat processing plant. You know, that's something that I'd like to look into, working at a meat processing plant. So there, just now I want to do things. And then I didn't.
Then you attribute that to Garden City Harvest, maybe? I don't, or do you?
Yeah, I would. I think if I wanted to started working at Garden City Harvest, I'd still be doing the same stuff I was 2 years ago, just hanging out.
Do you see your old buddies from those days? Or?
Yeah, I do. I still hang out with some of them even. Some still have the same qualities as they did 2 years ago. But
they're not bad people. They're just in a different place than you are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you see a future, like a profession, for you later in this field, in ag or ranching or whatever?
Definitely.
Last question. It's been a really hot summer. What sort of impact has that had on the garden? Is it tough on them, stressful on the plants?
The plants love it. It's doing great for the plants. I think it's more or less the people. Definitely sucks being up there when it's 100 degrees and then having to bend over in between the plants just makes it even hotter. And trellising in the hoop house with the tomatoes, it's crazy hot in there, and it's just, it can suck sometimes.
I bet it can. Yeah, but come fall, you know, you see all the work.
Yeah.
It's going to pay off, I bet.
Yep, and that's what makes it worth it.
Jesse Linton, thanks a lot for coming in. It was good meeting you.
Yeah, it was nice to meet you.
In tonight's weather forecast for west of the Continental Divide, tonight calls for mostly cloudy skies with scattered rain showers and isolated thunderstorms. Lows will be in the mid-40s to lower 50s. Tomorrow, look for mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain showers and a slight chance of thunderstorms. Highs will be in the 70s to lower 80s. Sunday, expect partly cloudy skies with highs in the 80s. For central Montana, tonight calls for mostly cloudy skies with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Lows will stay around 45 to 50 degrees. Tomorrow will be mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Highs will be around 70 degrees. Sunday, expect partly cloudy skies with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms. Highs will be in the lower 80s. And for southwest Montana, tonight calls for partly cloudy skies with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms through the night. Lows will stay around 40 to 50 degrees. Tomorrow, look for partly cloudy skies with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms through the day. Highs will be around 70 to 80 degrees. Sunday will be partly cloudy. Highs will peak around 75 to 85 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Olivia Riuta.
One of these days, I'm going to get on the radio and talk about how Congress has really put partisan politics aside and gone back to the good old days of legislating, coming together to invest in programs and services that make our families and communities stronger. Well, today is not one of those days. Today, I get to talk about the newest ideological debate, whether we make sure that our neighbors don't go to bed hungry. Today, we get to talk about food stamps. Food stamps, officially the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, is the most effective and important anti-hunger program in the U.S. Most of the folks who get SNAP are children, they're elderly, or people with disabilities. Over 80% of Montana households with SNAP have incomes below the poverty line. The poverty line for a family of four is $23,500 a year. And almost 40% of households are actually in deep poverty, with incomes at or below half of the poverty line. Food stamps have historically been part of the Farm Bill. And after the Senate passed the Farm Bill this summer, the House picked up the baton and effectively broke it in half, removing the nutrition and hunger parts of the Farm Bill while giving the go-ahead to billions in farm subsidies. Since the 1970s, the idea was to tie the food stamps and nutrition portions that help low-income folks to farm subsidies that mostly benefit large agribusiness and wealthy farmers, bringing together urban and rural needs, creating bedfellows just strange enough to make lawmakers work together. Until now. Last month, House Republicans voted to split the two portions. The expectation was that they could use this opportunity to make deep cuts to the program. And lo and behold, Republicans announced just yesterday that they want to cut $40 billion from SNAP. One out of every eight Montanans benefits from food stamps, with an average monthly benefit of $127 per person. It's one of the only programs that is available to all low-income, low-wage earners, and it's an important hand up for those who are underemployed. In fact, during the Great Recession, the number of individuals and families accessing SNAP increased sharply as people lost jobs or saw their hours cut. This quick response and increase in participation in SNAP is ironically one of the reasons that opponents want to cut the program. SNAP is widely considered one of the most effective and quick responding programs to a recession. Not only does it make sure that a parent whose hours are cut is still able to put dinner on the table, but it puts money straight into local economies. You see, when you're a low-income family, you pretty much spend every single dollar each month just to get by. So if you receive food stamps, you're still going to spend every single dollar because you still need to put gas in the car or get on the bus or buy your kids' clothes. Food stamps dollars get out to people and into local economies quickly. And it's estimated that for every dollar spent through SNAP, it generates at least $1.70 in economic activity, literally bang for the buck. In 2012, SNAP benefits infused about $193 million into our state economy. It is probably important to talk a bit about what food stamps will get you, because opponents have done a great job of racializing and stigmatizing people who access the program and what these folks are buying. Food stamps will just get you food. Not hot food from the deli counter, not Burger King, good old grocery store food. It won't buy you toilet paper, diapers, dish soap, tampons, or toothpaste, as if we need those things anyway. And for the record, the majority of food stamp recipients are white. SNAP provides enough benefits so that an individual or family can afford the USDA quote-unquote thrifty food plan. It's a bare-bones diet. If you actually read the plan, you will see that it took six people with PhDs to come up with a way for a low-income person to get a nutritious and balanced diet on what amounts to $4.25 a day here in Montana. So thrifty is perhaps an understatement. So as alluring as this get-rich-quick, get-onto-food-stamps plan sounds, it is simply untrue. For one, the average per-person per-month benefit here in Montana is $127. Or just $4.25 a day, or $1.41 per meal, not exactly living high on the hog. Most people who are on SNAP and can work do. And finally, SNAP is one of the most efficient and effective programs out there, with much less fraud than, say, I don't know, farm subsidies. SNAP works for Montana. Unfortunately, our lone representative, Steve Daines, hasn't been. He voted with his Republican caucus last month when the farm bill was divided, and will soon vote on the proposed $40 billion in cuts. It's time for Representative Daines to work for Montana, to stand up to his caucus and to oppose any cuts to the program. So call him. His number is 926-2122. But he should go beyond that. As a freshman legislator and a successful businessman, he should invest some time understanding what it means to get by on just $4.25 a day. So I'd like to challenge Representative Daines to take the SNAP challenge and live for a week like the 1 in 8 Montanans who access food stamps. Many in the U.S. House have already taken the challenge, including some from his caucus. I'll even do it with him. Representative Daines, me, and the 129,000 other Montanans who rely on food stamps to make ends meet every day. I'm Olivia Riuta with Montana Women Vote. Thanks for listening and have a fabulous weekend.
Olivia Riuta is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Courtney Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Jovetic. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.